Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
Welcome back, Dr. Paul. You've been playing hooky.
I had to do a whole lot of maneuvering to get the days off.
They said you were just relaxing on a beach with pina coladas.
Yeah, relaxed. Rested my voice. Well, anyway, I'm glad to be back for several reasons. When I look and try to get caught up on all the news and things, it's a little depressing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first thing I said, Daniel, we picked these three things to deal with, but they're all talking about the enemy.
Yeah.
But I guess our friends out there need to know about the enemy, too, because all of them at times claim they're their biggest friends of liberty and democracy.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But the one that caught off our attention, because we've talked about this young lady for a long time, we always wished her well that she would change her mind and be, and become a citizen of the libertarianism. But she hasn't quite made that. But we have talked about her. And I've always liked to talk about the issues over the personalities. But you know what? You could do that, and you can modify your language, but you can't really do it without identifying the personalities, you know. But there's a lot of demagoguery goes on in politics, and all you have to do is listen to the presidential election. There's a lot of gab and a lot of accusations, a lot of noise. But the person we want to talk today about is Nuland.
Victoria Nuland.
And she's been around a while. She was a friend of Dick Cheney, so I guess she probably supported all those wars, don't you think? Or started them. And she also has been on both sides of the fence. You know, if it's a Democrat, she got along with Obama. So she can get along with both parties as long as they're neo-conish. And sometimes I think she's not just neo-conish, she's a one plus hop above it, because she just is determined. I can't imagine, could she be making any money on this? Nobody would do this just to make money.
No, of course not.
But anyway, we're going to be talking about her. And main reason is about this stuff going on in Ukraine and the financing there and the Iraq war and all the things that she's been involved in. But of course, she was involved in the coup. It was 2014, and I heard Tucker Carlson talking about this, and he was very much aware that 2014 was a big deal. But that shouldn't surprise any of us. So anyway, right now, what's the news? Is she getting promoted or demoted? That's what I want to know.
It's a big story that broke this morning. And if you put on that first clip, this is the AP's take on it. Victoria Nuland, third highest ranking U.S. diplomat and critic of Russia's war in Ukraine, is retiring. Now, this is out of the blue. She's had a very high profile recent couple of weeks. She was in Kiev. And she gave a major talk at the CSIS neocon think tank in Washington, D.C. And in both of those, she said Russia should expect a few surprises coming up. She's been the biggest hawk there is. And all of a sudden, she's retiring. And some people have commented, well, she's only 62. We know as a government employee, that's a little young to retire. I don't know the details of it, but it seems like an abrupt departure, particularly for someone who's always said Russia's losing, Ukraine is going to win. So if Ukraine is on the verge of winning, why would she miss her chance at a victory lap? That's the big question. But before we go into maybe more of the whys, just to remind people of what Victoria Nuland's role has been. Now, we'll take a deeper dive before, but in the context of Ukraine, put on the next clip. This is what she's most famous for. So there was massive demonstrations 10 years ago, almost to the week, in Ukraine, in Kiev. The people in the streets overthrew a democratically elected and universally recognized government in Ukraine. And in the midst of the chaos and violence, here comes a senior State Department employee and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine handing out cookies and showing signs of support, not to the government that we recognize, but to the rebels overthrowing the democratic order. And after that happened, put on this next picture, here she is smiling and laughing with unelected people that she helped get appointed to the coup government. So the thing is, Dr. Paul, if you can imagine, if we had, okay, imagine if the January 6th riot, or whatever you want to call it, was actually an insurrection. And it really was. And these guys, instead of putting their feet on Nancy Pelosi's chair, they were really serious and had guns, and they were shooting people. Now imagine if the Chinese ambassador brought some Chinese diplomats right into the middle of it and stood in the middle of the Capitol and said, "Keep it going, guys. We're with you. We have some guns."
She's a loyal soldier herself,
isn't she? Yeah, she is.
But the bigger thing is figuring out to whom is she so loyal.
Yeah.
And the one thing we know is just generally speaking, people like this, they cite democracy and freedom and the Constitution.
Yeah.
And we know that is just insanity to believe that kind of stuff. But they cite that. But so they have to say one thing and get the benefit convincing the people they're really on our side and they're on our side of freedom. But that isn't the case. And we put them in the category of a neocon, and a neocon generally hides themselves as conservatives, but they are able to deceive the people and become very, very, very aggressive and warmongering. At the same time, during this whole process, and especially her tour of duty in the public arena, is the craziness that goes within the progressive era. Because the progressives are supposed to be against all this, but all of a sudden, especially in recent years, the conversion is, it looks like she's been able to capture the support of progressives as long as she's pro-war.
Yeah.
A few conservatives say, it's costing us too money here, too much money, and we should be doing this, and eventually we'll have to quit, because they're arguing over, should we send the money first to the Ukrainians or to our borders to try to make us safe? And so it goes on and on. But, that is the biggest job, because, we've talked about this. Why, after it's all over and then you see what miserable failure there was in the Middle East and all these places where predictions were made by many, many people, Afghanistan. Why? And I have asked that question all the time. Why didn't they? Because now people say, why did you do it? Why did you do it? Well, why didn't you allow them to do it? So to wake up the people before these tragedies happen. And of course, that's almost what we're trying to do now, because she's not going to walk away. She's not going to fly in her jet and go someplace and vacation. Her life is maneuvering and manipulating the neocon message, which can be almost whatever it wants. It doesn't pick sides. It picks special interests and special privileges. And sometimes you never figure it out. But she's definitely been one that we can get a pretty good guess that you better be cautious if she's making any promises to you, because they're probably not sincere.
Yeah. No, you make a really good point, though, is that the neocons have been returning to their left-wing roots. That's where they came from. They were all Trotskyites. Their parents were Trotskyites in the 50s and 60s. They were Trotskyites. And you're right, they were misidentified as conservatives because they were espousing a robust foreign policy and a robust military policy. But the fact is that they're actually far left at heart. They believe in a global revolution instead of the global communist revolution under Trotsky, global democratic revolution now. And they've returned. Like Bill Kristol quit the Republican Party, hates the Republicans. It's the same with these. These are Democrats. They're like the Scoop Jackson pro-war Democrats. But I wanted to bring a little bit of humor, unintentional humor, into the discussion, Dr. Paul, because Tony Blinken, he had a prepared statement. Our Secretary of State, and he was put out a statement on the retirement of Victoria Nuland from public service. Remember, she is the architect of all of these wars. She's been behind the war. She's never seen a war that she doesn't like. Put on that next clip. So here is the statement that Blinken put out today on the retirement of Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, Victoria Nuland. Now here's a couple funny parts I highlighted about Victoria Nuland. Put on the next one. He said, Victoria Nuland has let me know she intends to step down in the coming weeks for Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, a role in which she has personified President Biden's commitment to put diplomacy back in the center of our foreign policy.
Oh, boy.
I'll do the next one. This is it's just really funny. What makes Nuland truly exceptional is the fierce passion she brings to fighting for what she believes in most. And you'll love this: freedom, democracy, and human rights.
I can't believe that. So, her plans, in a way, they are fascinating, and they're sort of entertaining because some of it is so bizarre.
Yeah.
But you just wonder. But you know, this business of the left going over to become so-called conservatives, then change their mind. But you know, it wasn't like it was a sincere effort to try to understand somebody else's position.
Yeah.
They described it and wrote about it. This is the strategy, you know, that we have to do. We have to go there and neutralize, you know, those Republicans and do all that. So, but it's a mess now, and that's the way I expect it to happen, whether it's economics or personal liberties. Once you have no anchor on what you believe in, it creates a mess and chaos and internal strife and then bankruptcy. We see the social and the financial bankruptcy coming as a consequence of this, and they just shift their gears. I mean, one of the biggest shift of gears occurred after World War II. You know, how communists could become fascists pretty easily.
Yeah.
And they're still floating around. They still float that term around,
yeah,
and, you know, to use all kinds of demagoguery tactic to blame people for their views. But, you know, I've always said to the few speeches I've given, is it's not complicated, and you could explain it. If you can't explain what you believe in about a paragraph, you're not helping anybody.
Yeah. They can probably do it in a word or two: power and money.
Yeah,
you know, it's the epitome of what you always talk about, nihilism. They're the classic nihilist, wouldn't you say?
We don't tolerate anything that's truthful.
Yeah.
We have to destroy him. And I think that's part of, you know, we are cautious in our praise of Trump, but he represents that part because he does come out with ideas that conflicts with theirs, and they hate his guts.
Yeah.
And of course, we want to encourage him, but we also would like to make sure that we don't see Nolan back in the administration,
yeah,
preparing a war for the Republicans.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do one more unintentionally hilarious thing from Tony Blinken's statement about praising Victoria Nuland. Put that next one on because it is, you can't read it without laughing. But it's Nuland's leadership on Ukraine that diplomats and students of foreign policy will study for years to come. Now, I completely agree with that statement, but not for the reasons he's saying. Do you want to destroy a country? Do you want to destroy our economy? Do you want to kill 500,000 people? Well, here, let's study how Victoria Nuland helped do it. You know, it's hilarious.
They won't admit that the real goal is enriching our friends.
Yeah.
And they could count them. But that enrichment is not permanent, and we shall see what's going to happen. But I guess about what we fall back on, at least I do, on the idea that we have to seek the truth the best we can and try to reveal it and try to expose it, realizing that nobody has a monopoly control over truth, but there's other people, you know, just love it because they have a monopoly over nihilism.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's a nihilist. They don't believe in truth. We don't have any enemies or anybody competing with us because they don't even believe in truth. So we'll take care of them.
Well, here's an example of why Victoria Nuland is everything wrong with foreign policy. Now, there's a danger of making her the devil himself, so that when she's gone, everyone says, "Whew, that's great."
Yeah.
It's, you know, but this is why, this is the epitome. This epitomizes, as you say, Dr. Paul, the neocons throughout certainly the post-communist era. Put this, now this is just from Wikipedia. I mean, this is nothing special. So here is Victoria Nuland's trajectory. From 93 to 96, during Clinton's presidency, she was Chief of Staff to Deputy Secretary of State Strobe Talbot. Now, if you're not familiar with Talbot in the immediate aftermath of the Cold War, go look it up, because everything that happened bad in Central and Eastern Europe after communism was the work of Strobe Talbot. Really one of the most evil people. I would put Brzezinski in there as one of the most evil people. We could go back before that, but one of those. So she worked for Talbot. That is where she cut her teeth. So from 2003 to 2005, she was the principal deputy foreign policy advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. So she ran for Dick Cheney, the Iraq War. That was her baby. Now go to the next one. During the Maidan uprising, Nuland made appearances supporting the Maidan. We talked about that before. And she was a part of the infamous phone call, Dr. Paul, which we've mentioned many times on the show, where she was talking to Jeffrey Pyatt in an intercepted phone call where she was literally making plans for the coup government, who should be in. They were trading it like baseball cards. Okay, I want this guy in. I want this guy in. And then they said, well, we didn't have anything to do with it. It was just all the people.
You know, when they lay these plans, they know they not only desire it, but they would claim, well, it might be necessary, you know, to have violence and war going on. But it is utterly amazing to me because they must have a sense that the cost is going to be very, very high. So they, but that's part of, you know, a nihilism. They just don't believe there's truth. It, because a lot of people, yes, I remember asking one person when we were leading up this, how many troops are going to die before you decide we have to come home?
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah.
And the question wasn't answered, of course.
Yeah.
But they don't look at it that way, and therefore human life and liberty is not their goal. And they are able to demagogue. And then, of course, what I see as the greatest influence has been the educational system that has indoctrinated a whole nation and a lot of people outside of America, you know, in the last 100 years ago. So these coups that are occurring now are understandable and predictable. And that's why we do hear, I like it when the Republicans, it's not quite like the neocons splitting off, but there are some Republicans now and a few Democrats coming back. Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
But most of the time it's, well, we just want to put the money someplace else.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, it's cut it off.
Well, that's what, remember, Nuland said just last week, I think it was, in that CSIS speech. Well, most people don't realize that most of the money that we send to Ukraine actually comes right back to America. The military industrial
complex.
Sometimes
it never leaves. They send a check over to the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Oh, here's your airplane.
Yeah.
What was it the other day? They were in a debate. They were criticized. Oh no, we don't give them any money. We just loan it to them.
Yeah, that's a good loan. Well, I wanted to do one other thing because this sort of backs up what we were saying, which is don't rest so easy just because one person is gone. So Nuland is out. They've already announced her replacement, at least temporarily. Put this one up. This is from a Blinken statement. President Biden and I have asked Undersecretary for Management John Bass to serve as acting Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs until Nuland's replacement is confirmed. Well, who's John Bass? You wouldn't have heard of him. He's arcane. Before we go to that next clip, just remember, Nuland was evil because she served Strobe Talbot and Dick Cheney and backed up all of their wars. Well, who's John Bass? Put the next one up. This is from his State Department bio. Ambassador Bass's assignments have included service on Vice President Dick Cheney's staff and advisor to Deputy Secretary of State Strobe Talbot. So he has literally the identical background that Victoria Nuland has without the baggage. And here's the kicker, Dr. Paul. Put the next one. Here's what John Bass is best known for, or maybe not well enough known for. He's a former ambassador to Afghanistan who oversaw the U.S. withdrawal from that country. Now, I don't think anyone, I hate to blame him for this, I don't think anyone would point to our withdrawal from Afghanistan and say, that John Bass, he really knows how to organize things.
But the observers who will plan the next evacuation, they'll know he followed orders.
He followed orders.
They all left.
Yeah.
Then we'll count up the losses later on. But, you know, they do emphasize now, which is something they figure is appealing to the American people, that they left all the weapons behind and all the bad people are going to get the weapons. But how many weapons have been left behind in Vietnam and Korea? Every place we go in. And that's irrelevant. Matter of fact, that's a plus for the military-industrial complex because, of course, all those old weapons, they weren't any good anyway. We got to get going. We're always coming up short. We don't have enough airplanes, enough ships, enough bombs. We don't have enough wars is what they're really saying.
Well, we leave behind the weapons, but we also leave behind the unexploded cluster bombs that the kids get blown up on, all sorts of these landmines and things. So we leave a lot of stuff behind. But I guess we should move on, and we don't have any clips for this, except we have a video clip, and this is our favorite senator, our second favorite senator, Marco Rubio, that great American. Now, he basically let the cat out of the bag, and I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, because let's listen in and hear what little Marco had to say in an interview, I think, over the weekend. We're going to play that 33 seconds. You might want to put your earpiece in, Dr. Paul. Listen to what Rubio has to say about Ukraine.
Sure to do that. Here's what I do know. There is no way that the Russian Federation takes Ukraine, all of Ukraine, half of Ukraine. And that was Putin's goal from the beginning, was to carve it up into half, at least half the country, including Kyiv. That's not going to happen. On the other side of it, the reality of it is that Ukraine is small compared to Russia in terms of size and its ability to bring scale, its ability to force conscript people. So neither kind. This is, I'm just being honest. And in the past, I have tried not to talk about this publicly because I thought it undermined the leverage that Ukraine had. But now it's the reality. Okay. Neither side is going to be able to achieve.
So he's basically saying, I knew all along Ukraine wasn't going to win, but I didn't want to say it in public. Yeah, what do you think about that?
He was promoted the day he arrived, or the day before, that, boy, he is a leader. They even talked about him his first term, a year or two. Oh, we got to make him president. And who knows what's going to happen. But I'll tell you, he's dangerous. And there's a few like that. Tom Cotton is another one in that category, too, because they're not on our side. And they get us into these things, but they're smart and they're slick. And they speak well, and they impress a lot of people. But they're usually introduced into the system, through the military.
Yeah.
The military, and if you could pass these bills and follow the foreign policy that we have. But even now, the foreign policy is getting so mixed up, because I don't remember a time when it was so ambivalent about, should we support Israel now by giving them more weapons, or should we cut back with them on all that? That is totally chaotic. Yeah. And then here I imagine the demonstration in this country is anti-Israel, which I don't approve of, but I can tell you one thing, you could prevent it. I just quit getting out of picking sides.
Yeah.
So, but that's not going to be the way it's going to be done. They're going to keep doing this mess unless we get a bigger platform. We need more people with us.
We do. Yeah, we're growing slowly. But, just think about how grotesque it is what Rubio said. Hey, I knew they weren't going to win anyway. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to discourage anyone. You know, when you look at Ukraine, it's awash in blood, 500,000 soldiers dead. I don't know how many on the Russian side. Cities destroyed, leveled. I knew all along this was a completely hopeless case, but I didn't want to do anything to stop it before it started. I wanted to let it keep going.
But they never ask, or would they answer, how many lives did they plan to lose before they changed their mind?
Yeah.
I guess 2.5 years, 3 years now, they're getting a little bit tired of it because the people are starting to wake up a little bit late. But that's the real problem, is that the people don't get the information until later on. But that also means there's a media problem. But I've also been encouraged recently. My prediction when the internet came out was it'll be okay, because anybody that I've met so far, and this is 10, 15 years ago, that are interested in the internet and the computers were the libertarians.
Yeah, they
and
were.
I said, they're going to think of an alternative. Now, just think of the challenge to the mainstream media right now. There's a few people out there reaching, hundreds of thousands or more, million.
Yeah.
Those numbers are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they're not promoting Marxism.
Yeah. Well, look at Tucker. He's not necessarily a libertarian, but he shares a lot of our views, and he's reaching billions.
Yeah.
So that's always good news. Well, I guess the last one we want to cover today is, I don't know if you're feeling super, but it's Super Tuesday. It's going to be 15 or 16 states are holding their primaries. And put up that next clip. This is from Zero Hedge, just to let us know what's going on here. Super Tuesday. Normally, we'd kind of be at the edge of our seats wondering how people were going to do. Well, it doesn't look that way today, because Trump already has 273 and he needs 1215 to win. He's going to do a lot. Now, Nikki Haley, she won one, Dr. Paul, over the weekend, I think it was. She won Washington, D.C. So she says we're still in the fight.
Is that positive or negative?
That's a good question. Yeah.
In the center of big government.
Yeah. Well, she's not a threat to him. And in fact, I was listening to the guys on the Duran this morning, and they say that Nikki is going to run independent, which could be why she's hanging in there right now. So, boy. Anyway, what do you think about Super Tuesday this year?
Well, I may sleep through it. I know. I'll watch and I'll pick and look at the statistics, and then there'll be somebody, that looks like that'll be helpful if this Congress is a little bit better. But, you know, when I think of politics in the long run, I was fascinated with politics pretty early because World War II was going on, and my dad was a fanatic in listening to the radio, uh-huh. and I'd sit there with him and listen to it. So I've seen this, and elections were big deals, and there was a Republican family, Winder Wolksy, but nothing ever changed. And the more I was involved, the more I was convinced things don't change that much. But does that mean you don't care who wins the election? No, I would like to see some improvement. And I think the biggest disgust in this country today are the lies being told, in the political arena. And I think one side far excels the other side on how much they do. And I think that the people who control the media are a big deal. So, but there are going to be some victories. But I still stick to my message. Will the whole message of this campaign be that, I think Ron's right. If we didn't have counterfeiting, which has been professionalized and given a monopoly, and they could run the world currency, maybe we wouldn't have all this spending on this evil.
Yeah.
But no mention of that. Maybe we should look to the founders for a guide and the Constitution about how do we get our kids involved in war? Well, one thing is you get rid of the draft.
Yeah.
And the next thing you do is you tell people that you have to have a declared war. And if they still won't do it, write a law that says anybody that voted positive for going into a war, you lead to charge.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody would wake up one of these days.
Well, you made a really good point just now that, some of these people, they didn't win the election. But, sometimes by losing, you can actually win, And you think about this through history, our past 30 years or so, the Ron Paul movement. You didn't win the presidency, but you launched the Liberty Movement. You brought the Fed as to a household word, So you didn't win, but in the long term, those ideas are winning. I would say the same is true with Pat Buchanan.
Yeah. I think so. And most people measure only by did you win?
Yeah.
How many bills have you passed? And all this kind of stuff. But those are measurements that were irrelevant to me. And my thing was, are people interested? And of course, I've told it many times that my excitement has been when I could get an excited college audience in a liberal, very liberal school,
sure.
and talk about personal liberty and even getting rid of the obsessive taxations and wars and all this. It was a very popular issue on campuses.
Yeah,
but they don't get to hear it.
They don't well, but I would say Pat Buchanan, because Pat Buchanan introduced the idea of being conservative and right wing but anti-war. And I think that was
right.
a big movement.
Right.
And if you went back a little further, I would say Ross Perot in a way. He didn't win anything. But people started paying attention to the economy, and it wasn't exactly your view when he said the giant sucking sound of NAFTA, but he raised people's awareness of what was happening to the economy.
Yeah. The information, it's a forum. Although a lot of people would say to me, well, if you don't think there's ever any changes with this election, it's all bipartisan. So, well, I did spend a few years, but my goals were different.
Yeah.
If somebody would listen, then that to me was satisfying. So the measurement was never I would have had an absolute 100% different political career if my goal was, I made it. They don't know how determined I am is to get rid of the Fed and work wholeheartedly on that. And that wouldn't have, because it didn't happen, but it didn't mean that you can't take a step at a time. Yeah. And that's the way it is, because there's no magic wands.
Yeah.
And it is changing people's minds, and to try to explain to them why we are in this mess.
And we would have known it if you would have called your staff in at the time and said, okay, listen, guys.
We changed.
Sometimes when you want to go into leadership, you got to follow. Then we would know it's all over.
I tell the story about I was sitting beside somebody once and we were voting. He usually voted with me, but it was a tough vote, so he voted wrong. And I said to him, I said, how come you're doing that? I said, we vote together. And he looked at, he says, well, he says, it's that vote, I think it was on the I forget which one it was, but he said, oh, that would be so hard for me to explain it back home. So it's, the other one was what you already gave the quote away, and that is, oh, I had to change. He was telling me he was going to change for the whole time. He says, I'm in leadership now. That's why he had to vote the right way.
Well, you know who I would say is kind of in leadership in a way, but who hasn't changed is our good friend Thomas Massey, who's on our board. He's in the very powerful Rules Committee. He kept his powder dry during the McCarthy fight, and we actually, you know, we were kind of in favor. I was, at least. I thought it was a good idea. He said, no, it's not going to get any better. Turns out he was right, and one of the deals that he made to support McCarthy in the first place was a place on the Rules Committee, which is very, very powerful. People don't realize that. That's why Johnson keeps putting things on the suspension schedule, because he's worried about
making it harder for them to pass it.
Yeah. But I wanted to disclose then, if you think we're about done with my bonus clip, we'll skip those couple of clips that I added in. But speaking of Thomas Massey, he just put out a release today, just reaffirming what a great leader he is. Representative Thomas Massey invites Julian Assange's brother, Gabriel Shipton, to attend the State of the Union address. Now, I got a text from Gabriel when we were doing the show yesterday. He's up on Capitol Hill, tirelessly fighting for his brother's freedom. And it's great to see Thomas Massey making such a move on behalf of Julian Assange. And here's just a quote from it. Representative Thomas Massey announces that Mr. Gabriel Shipton, brother of imprisoned journalist Julian Assange, will be attending the State of the Union address as his guest. Mr. Shipton is a prominent advocate for Mr. Assange's release. Thomas Massey said the U.S. government's ongoing effort to prosecute Julian Assange threatens the First Amendment rights of Americans and should be opposed. During his term in office, I asked President Trump to pardon Mr. Assange, and I was disappointed by his failure to do so. It goes on, but there's a clip. So, great move on Thomas Massey's part.
What do you think the odds are that Biden is going to crowd in and say, I want him to be my guest?
Very unlikely.
They'll probably lock the doors or something.
It'd be nice if
that is great. And they are. It's symbolic, but it's still powerful, because people will stop and think about it. Because just think of how many people have hardly even know the name Assange, because they've kept it out of the media. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for being with us today in the Liberty Report. I am very happy to be back and doing well, and I think that Daniel held the fort, and I had to hurry up because he was doing such a great job. I thought maybe I would get bumped out. But anyway, I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to have our viewers back again, and please come back to the Liberty Report soon.